Welcome to this edition of the Journal of African History podcast. My name is Michelle Moyd, and I'm part of the editorial board at the Journal, and I'm an associate professor of history at Michigan State University. Today, I'll be speaking with Dr. Sarah Van Burden, who is an associate professor of history and African American and African studies at The Ohio State University. Currently, she is a fellow at the School for Advanced Research in Santa Fe, New Mexico. We'll be talking today about an article co-authored by Dr. Van Burden and Dr. Jillian Matisse, who unfortunately could not join us today. It's called History by Commission, The Belgian Colonial Past and the Limits of History in the Public Eye. The article is one of our History Matters features, which aims to bring issues of contemporary relevance into the journal in a shorter format than our typical research articles. The article we are discussing features in issue 3 of volume 64, and it will be linked in the show notes. Dr. Van Burden, welcome. Could you maybe start us out today by briefly explaining how this article came to be?
Thank you for having me, and thank you so much for inviting Jillian and me to write this article about this experience. So we were both asked to serve as experts for a Belgian parliamentary commission that was created in 2020 based on a parliamentary resolution that stated that a special commission was necessary to come to terms with Belgium's colonial past and the way it has shaped its present and sort of the present of its former colonies. It was a commission of politicians represented according to the way they represented in the Belgian parliament. But one of the requirements of the resolution was that this group hire a group of experts to write a report in response to some of the questions in the resolution that would then orient the work of the politicians, the kind of hearings they would organize and the kind of topics they would address. The group of experts contained 10 people, 5 of whom were historians. And what we do in the article is reflect mostly on the work that we did as historians. We talk a little bit less about the other sections of the report. We really worked in response to some of the questions that the parliamentary commission had, which were incredibly broad, which turned out to be part of the problem sort of along the process as we progressed. Our group was composed of, as I said, 5 historians, 2 of which who were Congolese, and 3 of which were Belgian, 2 of which work at Belgian institutions. So it was a fairly varied group of experts that we worked with. The process by which we were chosen or asked was not entirely clear to us. It was a political process that took place behind closed doors. I could tell sort of from the conversations that I've had that it was a deeply political process, as these things are. A certain number of people from different parts of the country had to be represented. In Belgium, everything has to be balanced between Francophone and Flemish speaking people. A number of people from Central Africa, Rwanda, Burundi, and Congo had to be represented. So it was a balancing act that sort of determined the people that eventually ended up in the commission. And several people were asked and said no, chose not to participate. So it was sort of an individual decision for each of us to do so.
Thank you so much for filling in some of that background. And that leads then into the next question, which is to ask you to briefly summarize what the article in the Journal of African History does.
Well, since it's an article for this new section called History Matters, we reflected really on what this kind of work means for us as historians to do. How do you handle this kind of public work? What are sort of the downsides and the upsides of it? What are the constraints that you work with? So we discuss the content of the reports, how we determine what things to write about. As I said, it was partially determined by this very sort of broad resolution that we were presented with, but it was also guided by what we, a conversation between us, believed were issues that were important to public understanding of the history of Belgian colonialism, and suggestions and feedback that we got from surveys and from diaspora organizations, for example. So it was a larger set of inputs, really, that led to the content. And most of what we do in the articles, I think, is we sort of reflect on how the process and procedure of this sort of shape its outcome. And what are sort of the ways in which you can, as a historian, counteract some of the ways in which this procedure is shaped as a political procedure and what and to what extent you cannot. We were very much confronted with what we sort of in the article call l'ordre du discours, sort of the the procedural control of this process, the way in which we were asked to reply a set number of questions that were very broad and that were not the kind of questions that would be the questions formulated by historians if they were asked what are the important questions about sort of a Belgian colonial past, because the resolution asked us to locate sort of where scientific consensus existed about the history of the colonial past, for example. Sort of the kinds of language used by the resolution sort of shaped what was possible, but also sort of the procedures set in motion by the resolution shaped what was possible. This was essentially fundamentally a political process. So that poses big challenges to historians, because there is a significant tension we noticed between public perceptions of what historians do and academic realities of what we do. There is a fairly strong public conviction that we sort of go digging for historical truths and facts, and the place where these can be found is, you know, in archives. We go looking for the smoking gun evidence in archives, and historians know very well that that's not how we go about our work, how we go about our jobs. And especially for historians specialized in sort of colonial histories and African histories, we know very well the limitations of this hyper focus on archives and the kinds of things that archives can and cannot do. So that was one of the challenges that we faced. So we talk in the article about how we managed that challenge. We also talk about how we managed sort of this delicate balancing act between recognizing the complexity of historical processes with a public need for very straightforward answers. And we're certainly not the first historians to confront that problem, right? Public historians face that problem every day in their work. How do you balance clarity with complexity? And particularly because this was a political process, it was quite important for us not to lean into the kind of answer that historians easily give that say, well, things are complicated. Because that kind of answer can sometimes work inadvertently to sort of sustain a kind of status quo thinking about empire. So that was something that we had to negotiate, that we had to be very, very careful about. And this idea, of course, that a political commission would establish a historical truth about the colonial past of Belgium in itself is an undertaking that historians absolutely and rightfully reject. So how do you work within that kind of a political process to still effect some change and to still effect some sort of broadening of knowledge about the colonial past without working towards these sort of hegemonic ideas about the truth about the colonial past? So those are the kinds of things that we reflect on.
Thank you so much. There's so much there, and this is so rich. So you've mentioned now in your last response this constellation of C words, clarity, complexity, complicity, and they certainly emerge strongly in the article. I wonder if you could say a bit more about this nexus or collision of complexity and complicity, and maybe mention some of the kinds of challenges and achievements that emerged from this two-year project as you grappled with that problem.
I think it's a problem that is quite familiar to those of us who occupy classrooms, right? This tension between making clear that understanding the past is a complex process, but that doesn't mean that we can't draw certain conclusions from this. So we usually, when we explain historical developments to our students, we start with broader generalizations and we focus on the bigger picture, and then we sort of enter into more complex historical detail and show our students different interpretations of different sets of evidence and so on. So that is something along the lines of what we tried to do in this report. But because you're working in this very politicized context, there's always sort of the risk of cherry picking. Not all audiences that you have in front of you, not all of these politicians are going to engage with the information that you give them in good faith. And this was a problem that we confronted frequently. We had discussions about, well, how do we talk about the ways in which pre-colonial violence in Central Africa sort of fed into the spiral of colonial violence without running the risk that people will use that argument to say, well, but clearly this is not, you know, colonial violence. It can be traced back to pre-colonial patterns of violence. So how do you introduce that kind of complexity while sort of being careful that that kind of argument won't be cherry-picked in order to argue against acknowledging the responsibility of the colonizer for the sort of systematic violence that colonialism represents. And then the second one is, as I mentioned, is this sort of care that you have to take that you don't contribute to the kind of status quo thinking about empire. Sort of, well, it's that people sort of throw their hands up and say, well, it's really complicated. The historians can't agree. So why should we venture into this process to be wary of having that kind of effect? And that was quite complicated because we're not really used in our academic work to writing that way. And you don't want to censor yourself. You want to use your full sort of academic capacity and your ability to sort of treat the complexity of this material. But you also want to set in place some guidelines as to how to treat certain evidence or how to balance out different kinds of evidence. So a lot of what we ended up doing is, was actually explaining how historians do their work and how what we do in writing about the history of colonialism is always this balancing act between looking at systems and structures and balancing it with individual agency, which is something that, that we do in the classroom as well. And this is absolutely not a plea to abandon complexity. It's just sort of an explanation of the kinds of problems that complexity poses in these sort of more public and political processes, I would say.
Yeah, one can think of many examples of contemporary relevance where these same kinds of issues come up. I really like your example of how we think about the times before colonialism and violence that may have occurred in those contexts as relating to or not what then follows with the colonial encroachment. Let's pick up on some of the ethical or related kinds of questions that might emerge from a project like this. To what extent do you think that this work or this kind of work intersects with some notion of civic duty or moral responsibility? What are the ethical considerations that historians might need to take into account or things that emerged from your experience as you pursued this project with your colleagues?
Yeah, that's a really important and a really difficult question at the same time. I don't want to speak for my colleagues, but I can tell you sort of what contributed to my decision, and I know this was the case from my colleague Gillian Matisse as well, is that to some extent, yes, of course, we were driven by ideas about our responsibility as Belgian citizens who happen to have particular kind of academic expertise in this area. And I should emphasize that academic expertise is not the only kind of expertise that matters in these kind of debates. It's just that that's sort of the perspective from which we were engaged and what we could contribute. Ultimately, it's an individual decision. I know there were many colleagues who did not want to engage in this kind of process, who don't necessarily believe that academic historians can or should engage in these kind of processes. I have a different opinion about that. I feel some of us happen to work on subjects that are of more immediate relevance to some of contemporary societal questions, and we can contribute to a better societal understanding of those questions. That doesn't make us more important historians overall. That's not at all a plea to say this is the kind of history that matters. I don't believe that at all, but just happens to be the case in this particular instance. We had something to contribute to a broader political debate, and we chose to engage in that, being well aware of sort of the risks that came with it. And that, as I said, that's sort of a personal decision. There's also, of course, this bigger ethical issue behind it of whom speaks for whom, because this was a Belgian process in which Belgian politicians were asked to make decisions about how to handle the country's colonial past. And in that sense, I think it was very important for us to recognize our positionality as white historians who work at well-funded universities, who can walk into an archive anytime they want to, who have the funding, who don't have the visa problems, and that contributes to who is considered an expert about these kinds of things and who is asked to contribute sort of knowledge about these kinds of things. And to make very clear in the report itself that this is a process in this case that has very deep colonial roots, this shaping of positionality. So those are, I think, some of the bigger challenges that we faced in the way in which we thought about our engagement with this process.
Yes, and thank you for naming those structural impediments. It is important to remind ourselves, remind our listeners that scholars from the Global South operate under very different constraints and structural limitations on their ability to do research that many people in the Global North do not face in the same ways. Thinking back to a conversation we had at a recent African Studies Association conference where we talked for a bit, one of the things you noted, and I had never thought about, is the specific Belgian practice of managing these histories through commissions. Are there any patterns you can comment on here, and what do those patterns say about state technologies of rule, empire, and the potential or not for reparation to African constituencies whose ancestors were harmed by Belgian and or more broadly European colonial rule?
Yeah, so there is a longer history to this kind of mechanism of the parliamentary or the investigative commission being used to get a handle on problems within Belgian politics that have to do with either what at the time was the colonies or later the colonial past. The first and one of the more famous examples is the 1904-05 Belgian Commission of Inquiry about the atrocities of Leopold II's rubber regime in Congo. In 1999, there was a commission, a parliamentary commission of investigation, which looked into the Belgian role of the assassination of Congo's first prime minister, Patrice Lumumba. And then we had this new commission in 2020, from 2020 to 2022. So it is not a unique event. It sort of fits in this longer history, and that did give us pause. We were wondering sort of, well, what do these various commissions have in common? And does it show us that, in fact, these kinds of parliamentary commissions are, in a way, sort of mechanisms to contain a problem and to co-opt a problem rather than to sort of fully on face a problem and deal with the consequences of issues. And to some extent, that is the case, I believe. That is part of these commissions as sort of technologies of rule, as you say, because they can put a box around the problem and say, okay, well, this is the problem. This is what we're going to do. They have a certain power to do that. That doesn't always work to the advantage of really solving the broader issues behind the problems that they're supposed to address. These commissions also have a pattern of using academic experts to sort of help them in their work. And that should give us, as quote unquote academic experts, pause, right? Because clearly this is a mechanism that was developed in the colonial period itself. And it actually contributed, especially the Belgian Commission of Inquiry about the rubber atrocities, contributed to the development of colonial sciences, because one of the arguments that came out of that was, well, there needs to be more expertise about the colonies in order to have a more rationally managed colonialism. That is one of the points of origin of this kind of academic expertise, and we need to acknowledge that history, I think. And then there's, as I said, there's this idea that these commissions can be used to manage problems by sort of containing them and shaping certain solutions that are politically convenient. So it is important to be realistic about the fact that these are political processes. That doesn't necessarily mean that they cannot present openings to affect change. I think both of those things go hand in hand. There is no sort of perfect opportunity or perfect sort of moment for change. You sort of have to, part of that is a little bit forced through these processes, I think. So, and different people may take different decisions about that. I think certainly there were colleagues who believed that these openings weren't large enough, or that they couldn't be used as effectively as was necessary. So there is a longer history to these that should give us pause.
It's a good place for me to call attention to a really fantastic line that appears in the opening to your article. Quote, we are interested in locating the openings, whether forced or not, through which historians can successfully take responsibility in public debates about the past, end quote. I was going to ask you to reflect on that a bit, you know, as somebody who's had the experience of working inside of this commission, what are some examples you see of these openings? And maybe in combination with this, we could mention the other main article in the History Matters for this issue, which is by Donatien Dibwe, an article in which he really kind of points out the importance of oral history and ways that it was not really adequately addressed within the commission. Maybe if you could think about those things together as a final question.
Yeah. So that question about openings, I think to a certain extent, it was prescribed to us what was expected of us. Tell us about colonialism. Tell us, you know, where are the areas of consensus? Evaluate all of the archives, you know, whether they're in Central Africa or in Europe, and what the problems are with these archives. It was a very, very broad remit. So we had a little bit of wiggle room to sort of elevate topics that we thought might be more important than others and push back against some of the assumptions in that resolution. We didn't necessarily have to follow it, and we didn't. Because one of the things that, for example, that we did, in part thanks to the work of people like Donatien Dibwe in the areas of oral history in Central Africa, that we could point out the way in which the past is sort of recovered to the extent that that is possible. What we know about the past does not rely only on archives, and especially not colonial archives, but oral history is very important. The other thing we sort of took the opportunity to do in our introduction is to push back against a couple of very common misconceptions about history and how it can be applied, particularly in the context of colonial history. And so the first of that is this, the fallacy of the balance sheet approach, right, to colonialism, debunking this idea that you can have a plus and a minus column in order to evaluate the colonial past, which is very prevalent, not just in Belgium, but outside as well, that is not sort of a correct form of historical thinking, that ignores the sort of fundamental structures of colonialism, this kind of balance sheet approach. The second issue, also commonly heard, very popular debate actually in the profession as well at the moment, is this idea that is this current concern with colonial history presentist? Are we projecting something onto the past? And that very wrongly suggests that colonialism enjoyed sort of widespread acceptance in its era, right? Which is a very Eurocentric view of colonialism. So the other thing that we underscore sort of from the start is that if you think about violence in connection to colonialism, violence is not an aberration, but violence is a structural part of colonialism. And you need to think about violence in broad terms, not just in terms of physical violence, but in terms of psychological violence, in terms of sort of long-term effects of colonialism. And then something that I brought up earlier as well, this sort of popular conception of truth and facts and how that differs with the kind of engagement with the past that historians have and the ways in which, yeah, as I said, we sort of balance out structural contours of a system against people's agency. And then the long-term impact of some of these things, that it is not the case that what is in the past is in the past, but the past, yes, does shape the present. So we could sort of do some positioning at the beginning of the report to help combat some of those more popular perceptions that showed, I think, our awareness that, okay, in the first line audience here are the politicians, but those are not the only people paying attention to this process. There was sort of, we hoped, and I think we were proven right, a broader audience behind it that was paying attention to this process. And I think we hope that that presented a bigger opening than just the opening to a political process. And I do think that we have seen some of that trickle-down effect, because even though the commission failed, so that's actually a very important piece of information to add to the podcast, after 2 years of work, two reports, a year-long set of hearings, the commission failed to pass a single recommendation. And there was a document with, I think, 126 recommendations that went from the very practical recommendations about, you know, mobility of scholars and so on to sort of recommendations about contemporary racism in Belgium. So it was a very broad document that was based on sort of these expert reports and based on the hearings. But it's failed because one of the recommendations was issuing apologies. And the problem that was sort of seen behind that by a number of political parties was the idea of reparations, that if you would apologize, that would open a door to reparations. And so eventually, the struggle over that recommendation meant that not a single recommendation was passed. It was a spectacular failure as a sort of a soft power exercise, because it's deeply offensive, especially to the many diaspora organizations who engaged in good faith with this process, for whom this was a slap in the face, this kind of sort of inability to then deal with the content of these hearings. And for, of course, the Congolese and the Burundian and the Rwandan people who engaged with this commission as well, with this what essentially was a Belgian process, who were willing to do this. Behind that, there are potentially sort of long-term openings. As I said, the politicians weren't the only people listening, and we do see that this was part of a broader societal process in which different institutions and smaller communities, for example, are setting in place similar processes. And the fact that this document exists and that's an official government document can help support and hopefully sustain some of these more localized processes.
Thank you so much for that great response. You know, I would just add, I think that the document will also be available to, and I think is available to researchers and instructors and all of us who can engage with it to better inform how we do things. Thank you so much, Dr. Van Burden, for taking time to speak with us about your and Dr. Matisse's work. And thank you for your work itself. We didn't get a chance to talk about the labor involved, but as you might imagine, this was kind of a Herculean task in terms of doing the work itself, but also doing it in a time of the global pandemic and many restrictions on the ability to do the work in person, et cetera, et cetera. So thank you so much. And I hope that our listeners will engage with History Matters when they can. And we very much look forward to as a starting point for some new engagement on the topic of colonial past and issues of restitution, reparation, and such.
Thank you. And thank you so much for the invitation to us to reflect on this process.
Our pleasure.